The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Hello and welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, your host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. As always, I'm really pleased that you're here listening, and hopefully you are taking the opportunity to use a lot of the information that we have given you in our last podcast and our blogs, because we have really, I'll give myself a quick pat on the back. I'll give myself a quick knock on the head too in a little while with what some of the things I'm going to tell you, because we have been really right on with this market. Hopefully you've been listening and paying attention and acting. Well, let's go back now and talk about some of the things that happened, because I've been telling you for a long time, if you've been listening, hey, we got a problem in these markets. I've been telling you about that since maybe July, mid-July actually. But on July 11th, you remember podcast number 18, I talked about Nokia. I talked about the fact that I thought Nokia had a real good foothold. Apple was surely coming out with the iPhone, but the only one that could compete with them, in my opinion, was Nokia. N-O-K is the symbol. It was $28 or so right about then, and now it's about $29.90, a nice up from then. But even with the market being incredibly difficult, this stock has held up very well. We've seen a couple of interesting announcements that AT&T is going to be doing a lot more with Nokia, and we saw a few additional new phones coming out because the N95 is now going to be available in the United States. They're going to have a variety of unlocked phones, which is very important these days if you know anything about mobile phones, and they've integrated GSM as well as just a whole host of marvelous components and internal design to their phones. Nokia is the number one handset maker in the world right now. And if you go anywhere in the world and look around, everybody's carrying Nokias. And while the iPhone obviously is something of a new entry into this market, realize that between the iPhone and the BlackBerry, that really covers most of the either Apple lovers or the people that are looking for a multimedia phone. Then you have the business people that are looking, business folks that are looking for the BlackBerry for their instant mail. But the Nokia is an all-around phone that from the entry level all the way through the business users are going to use. They have a wide selection and something for everybody. So we like that a lot and continue to like that. On June 29th, we talked about shorting Apple, as crazy as that sounded at the time. Really starting to nibble at Apple and short. Now, Apple was about 125 then, and it's about 125 now. You had some pain. You were having some pain for a while there because Apple just really vaulted up, but it came down. Now, it didn't only come down. I don't see, and from anything I've read or written about, just because of market conditions, there was some overhang in terms of sales. There was a variety of questions about the iMac. There was the continuation of concern over the Mac Mini. And when you look at the overall picture, I at this point, I'm changing my tune. I think that we had shorted it many, many times on the way up, made some beautiful profits on the way down. It's over, I guess, probably about 25 points lower than it is from the high at this point. It hit about 150 and change. And we covered our Apple short and our options, made some nice money on the shorts, lost money on the options, but overall it was a profitable trade. Now, actually, we're talking about getting into Apple. Not going to get into that right now, but we're starting to nibble at Apple as a buy at this point. On June 13th, and from then on, we talked about shorting Crocs. Crocs about 45 at the time. It came out with the earnings, and it just skyrocketed, went all the way up. I was getting all sorts of feedback, and people were just pissed at me from, really not from my podcast, because people were being very patient, not from my blog, but there was a bunch of people that told me I was a Crocs hater. It had nothing to do with the fact that they were losing money or making money from my recommendations. It's just that they loved Crocs so much that they said, hey, how could you say something negative about this company? I mean, the materials and the shoes and the comfort. I said, listen, the more you get crazy with me, the more I'm concerned about the stock as being an overblown fad that has a lot of froth. Well, let me give you a follow-up. And we talked about shorting this and gave you a few different ideas on how to do it. And hopefully you were following along, folks. Hopefully you were paying attention and you were acting, because when Crocs came out with earnings, they shot up to about 60. Well, now they're about $12 down in the last week or so, from where they were on their high, and we made some tremendous money on our shorts. We covered the shorts this week. We closed the positions on the options that just ended. Actually, we did two sets for our clients of put options, and we shorted it, and it was just a brilliantly nice move on Crocs. Now, Crocs has seen a lot of things happen with it. We're going to stay on the sideline and watch what happens moving forward on this, because there is a lot of volatility, and we'll let you know if there's anything that we are going to follow up and recommend on this. But I really don't want to talk. I'm frankly getting a little sick of the stock because of all the feedback we're getting from people that think we are a Crocs hater, whatever that is. Last week, we in the podcast, last podcast, we talked about, and on a few separate blog entries, buying a company called Zumiez. As a matter of fact, I think it was two podcasts ago, we talked also about the idea that, you know, you have Abercrombie on one hand, which is a great product and a great line, a great stock that unfortunately has, you know, only their products, primarily their products that they sell. And if that goes out of fashion, that general product design, they have a problem. And I walked into an area of thinking, hey, you know what? I started thinking, what is it that how can we combat this issue of a one-trick pony? Well, I looked around and I realized that the 12 to 24 year olds out there are buying Vans, they're buying, DGs, they're buying just an assortment of sneakers and clothing that is sold by a company called Zumiez. Now, they're not selling their own brand. Zumiez, symbol Z-U-M-Z. We started to recommend this at about 36. Do you remember? We told you to buy it. We thought it was a great idea. We said that, you know, there may be some volatility in the area of retail, and I don't usually like retail, but this is showing some incredible promise. As a matter of fact, last week there was a survey out, and it showed that the top 100 growing retail establishments, particularly retail in the area of clothing and specialty retail, and you know what? Zumiez made number 4. We told you to buy it at 36, 37, 38. You know, it popped to 46 last week. We're talking about only 2 to 3 weeks later, by the way. And right now it's resting at about 42 and change as of this podcast, as I'm speaking of this. ZUMZ, we've been buying all the way up, and I think there's a lot more opportunity. And if, in fact, it moved even against the markets, last Friday was a different situation. It moved down a few dollars. But if you look at what's happening, they're doing very well. Their same store comps are coming in much higher than anticipated. Sales have just blown away all the numbers they anticipated, and there's a real great opportunity. I'd be careful. I've been telling you to look at about under 40 when you do your purchases, and if you do see the volatility pick up again, I would use any pullback as an opportunity to buy this stock. And finally, talked about buybacks last week, and we talked about the buybacks that are being done at such a rate that are increasing EPS, earnings per share, artificially. Howard Silverblatt from Standard & Poor's and I talked about it at length, and I really, again, pounded the table and told you I am really concerned here. And what happened? Home Depot comes out with an announcement that they're going to scale back their buybacks because of the credit market concerns, and the stock drops last week from 38 to 36. Now, that may not be a big deal, but it's been on a tear on the way down of late, and there's a lot of concern about Home Depot right now, and I think it's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this whole stock buyback issue. You have to be aware. You have to be open-minded. You have to look at all the different scenarios from not only the emotional part of the markets when you look at the behavioral finance models, but when you look at the fundamentals and the technicals, the quantitative analysis, all these things come together to give us good investment disciplines. The Disciplined Investor is the podcast that gives you this, and that's what we're talking about, core disciplines to make you money. We get back, we're going to talk to Aaron Task, the managing editor of thestreet.com. Great guy. As a matter of fact, his podcast, he has a podcast as well, is one of the top rated on iTunes and other podcasting platforms, and he's in the running for one of the top podcasts of the year, I believe it is. I'm going to give you some information on how to vote for him because I think it's a great podcast. So when we get back, we're going to talk to him. Right now, we're going to talk about the book. There's a little commercial coming up, and I want you to listen real carefully, and we'll be back in about 30 seconds on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Did you know that bulls sometimes like the naked option? Bears sometimes buy butterflies. And diamonds are some trader's best friend. And there's nothing so satisfying as when we see our shorts come down. Unless, of course, everyone else has longs and are quickly covering their shorts. Did you ever see hammers with long bodies and short shadows after a shooting star appeared just prior to a dark cloud cover? There have been numerous sightings lately of long collars used upside down, head and shoulders. Sound like gibberish? Well, they're not. These are all real investment terms that you need to know. Learn the lingo and techniques of pro traders before you invest. And you too may even own spiders or even a new convertible. Coming to bookstores everywhere. The Disciplined Investor, the groundbreaking book that gives you professional investment tools page after page. Watch for it in bookstores everywhere. The Disciplined Investor. Get your copy and profit from it. Written by Andrew Horowitz.
Hi, this is Grammar Girl from QuickAndDirtyTips.com, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
All right, we're back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We're here with Aaron Tass from TheStreet.com, and as I told you, he's not just with TheStreet.com. He is the editor at large, and he really has a lot of experience and hopefully a lot of things we can talk about today. So thanks for joining me again today, Aaron.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
All right, so, you know, one of the big things, obviously, on everybody's mind is what's going on with the markets, what's happening right now, you know, what are we going to do, and there's a lot of, you know, what's your overall sense of what's going on here?
Well, the overall sense is we're having a mini panic in the financial sector. You know, there's a lot of hedge funds and other investment vehicles that were exposed to these mortgage-backed securities and then derivatives that were spun off of the mortgage-backed securities, and they're sitting on, you know, bad positions. They can't sell. They're getting redemptions from their investors, and so now they're selling the things that they can sell, which is, you know, hitting the quote-unquote good stocks and good assets as well.
Right. Well, you know, one of the interesting things is that when you look at the markets and you take all these things into consideration, and even if you look at where we were just in March, we're still substantially over where we were.
That's right. I mean, we're still not that far from the all-time highs either.
Right. And
that is the point that, you know, a lot of the bulls are making, and you know that does suggest. It's interesting, I would just say, how quickly we've gone from, you know, greed to fear, to use the vernacular that they like to talk about on Wall Street, that, you know, we were at 14,000 4 or 5 weeks ago, and everything was great, and nothing, it couldn't be better, it was the best of all times, and now people are worried that it's going to be 1987 all over again.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I look at it like a love relationship. You know, you're in love one day, and all of a sudden one day things don't work out, and you hate the other person. And the markets kind of have that going on right now. You know, you love your stock. It's the best stock in the world. And I mean, look at Apple from where it came out with the iPhone. It shot up. It came out with its earnings. It shot up. And it's like 30-something points below right now. I mean, it's just amazing. But,
right. Well,
but here's
I would think Apple just is an example of the stocks that people are selling because they might be sitting on other assets that they can't sell or are declining for fundamental reasons. I don't think Apple is declining because of bad fundamentals.
I agree. As a matter of fact, we recently picked it up at these prices, a couple of bucks below where it is right now, as a matter of fact, just in this recent downturn, because I do like the stock, but it kind of got away from us there. And so sometimes it happens.
Right. But from that perspective, you could look at this as an opportunity if, you know, you have some cash on hand, if you know, we're doing all the things that, you know, the textbooks say you should do, you know, trim your positions, using stop losses, using some prudent trading strategies to take advantage of these opportunities.
But the problem is that people don't do that, is what I think is happening. They just let things get away from them, and we had this what I've been calling this unrestrained optimism, and I call this the sinkhole effect. I'm not trying to use too many fun words here to describe all this, but my biggest concern for the last 3 or 4 weeks was that nobody said anything negative. Everybody was always positive. It was moving up and up on every different aspect. You would read about it and listen to it, and then I've been talking about this whole, and I'm probably everybody's sick of me talking about this, but I am so concerned about the share buyback and the artificiality of earnings growth due to the buybacks of EPS, you know, within EPS.
Yep.
The uptick rule, when I saw that, I said, you've got to be kidding me. This thing has been a tenant of the market since 1934 because we had to make sure that there was not an accelerated selling into a bad situation, and they just removed that. I mean, where's the thinking on that?
Right. Well, it's very interesting. I don't know if you know Teddy Weisberg at Seaport Securities. He's one of the old hands on New York Stock Exchange. I'd asked him about that a couple of weeks ago, and he basically said he still has yet to hear a good explanation as for why they got rid of that rule, and he was very concerned about that. And he's a guy who's been very bullish and for the most part remains bullish. I haven't heard a good reason or explanation as to why they got rid of that rule, and what guys like Teddy and others are telling me is that it's not causing the market to go down, but it's causing some of the volatility that we're seeing and certainly accelerating declines because now the short sellers don't have to wait for an uptick. So they're piling shorts upon, you know, people
upon
who
the sales.
Selling. Yeah, the natural
right.
sellers.
Right. So now you got this doubling effect on the downside. You know, it's interesting if you look at the markets today, and I find it fascinating, if just to really step back for a second and watch it, the ups and downs today, the movement, the volatility vacillation today has been incredible. You know, you see
all
a movement
week long, really, last few weeks.
Right.
Intraday moves are unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I mean, I think one of the things that I've been also concerned is that everybody's just remotely and robotically buying on the dips, and that doesn't always work out. And I have been saying that we need to be careful what sectors we're in. This subprime mess and the fallout into other sectors. Bear Stearns at 165 beginning of the year, 112 now, dipped down to 80 a few days ago. I mean, this is why you have to have this is my opinion. This is why you have to have disciplines. You have to have a plan. You have to work at making sure that, you know, you're not just throwing things out there and just letting it go.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Jim Cramer's obviously our biggest commentator here at TheStreet.com, and he says something that I think makes a lot of sense.
Who?
Jim Cramer? You might have heard
him. Oh, yeah, no. Oh, I heard him, yeah.
Yeah. you know, he always talks about if you don't have time, he says an hour per week per position, and if you don't have the time to take to do that, and, you know, you could use some variation of that, but if you don't have time to watch portfolios, you're better off putting your money in mutual funds because you need to be paying very close attention, especially in markets like these, and you talked about, you know, the robotic trading, and I don't know if you were intentionally doing this, but there's so much trading now that's happening. It's computer generated.
Right.
And it is robotic in a way. And I think that's where, you know, people are looking at these support levels and they're putting in buy orders there and almost not paying attention to what's going on around them in the fundamentals. And that's part of the reason why I think you're seeing some of these wild swings day to day and intraday.
I think that actually is a great segue into the next thing. You know, every day we're getting little hints of issues that are out there, and all of a sudden, we're starting to hear about the quant shops, the black box shops. What is
right.
that? And now we hear about a few of the mutual funds that are involved in that, not just the hedge funds, the mutual funds. And I think that bears some explanation because what I understand, and help me with this, what I understand is that there are mutual funds that we all think we understand that may be market neutral. In other words, they're going long, they're going short, they're utilizing some quantitative approach to picking the stocks and shorting those stocks. And somehow with this volatility, their systems have gotten it wrong really badly. Is that?
Yeah, and there's actually some discussion on Real Money, which is our sister site today, about how some of these folks were using systems that turned out that the data that they were basing it on was wrong. I think it was an error on Bloomberg, and I don't know the specific stocks, but that some of these funds got in trouble because of that, because they looked at these different valuation levels and they said, aha, you know, we like the stock here, or we're going to short the stock here. And it turned out the data that they were basing those trades on was wrong.
What kind of support do we have as investors, or for that matter, the mutual fund? I mean, they go after the data source?
It's a great question. I wonder about that. I think there probably is not going to be much recourse because if it was Bloomberg, they're going to say, well, I'm sure they have some sort of legal fine print on the Bloomberg terminal somewhere that says, you know,
right.
we believe this data is correct, but if it's not,
yeah, but not infallible. Yeah. Right. Exactly,
exactly.
Exactly. But that's really scary because, you know, you wonder about that. That is something that you take into context about that small situation where maybe an honest mistake, really. I mean, horrible, but an honest mistake that goes on there. One of the things that I've been really trying to address, I'm going to do a show about this in the next few weeks with John Dvorak, a guy from Barron's coming on, and a couple other guys from Wiki Financial. He has a new site coming out. This whole idea of transparency in the markets and, you know, who's telling you what. You know, for example, you're at a reputable firm. You've been around since, you know, years and years and years, and you're writing, hopefully we all believe, you know, writing for our benefit, okay? I'm out here, you know, I'm an investment advisor. I manage a lot of money. I daily am doing writings on my blog. I'm doing podcasts. Well, I enjoy doing it. I'm helping people. I get a great feeling for doing it. I get some great commentary back. I have this book coming out. I mean, this is that, right? You have this other set of people who are just blogging because they feel like doing it, right?
Yes.
And then you have these message boards. You kind of scratch your head and wonder, why are people telling me what they're telling me?
Right.
Who's telling me the truth? Is there any secret undisclosed? And even if they disclose something, how do I prove it's really correct?
Right. Well, when you saw what happened with the CEO of Whole Foods, you know, posting on the Yahoo message boards under an assumed name, and that's a great reminder.
That was weird.
That we should take everything you read on a message board with a big grain of salt.
Aaron, that was weird.
That was bizarre. Yeah, that's all, I mean, that's just like, the idea that he even thought that was okay. And
it was almost creepy. You know, yeah. I mean, it was almost creepy that, you know, you wonder what else was under this guy in this guy's closet, you know, going on. Because, but yeah, I agree. You know, who knows what's going on? I get, you know, I've been this big proponent about shorting Crocs for a long time, and everybody thinks I'm this jerk. It just does. I said, I don't care how comfortable these things are. I don't care. I don't care how much you love them. I don't care. What I care about is I think that from what I can see, a rotational Fed is going to be at play here. I think we're going to see a ramp up in their earnings once more throughout the summer, which we saw, and then it's going to kind of, you know, fade off. That was my impression. Okay. Now, markets helped me here. The stock has, I shorted it many times and covered it, did puts on it and covered it for client. You know, we made a bunch of money on it. But people think that I am this horrible person because I said, listen, I'm just trying to help out and give some, you know, secondary thought to this whole market and some ideas, and they get crazy.
Right. Well, I mean, there are people out there who get very emotional about their positions. You know, the phrase married to their positions. You know,
and what do you think about it? Let's talk about
they
it.
They fall in love. And so
well, let's talk
who
about
says
that.
Something bad about your wife, you know, you're going to take exception to them.
Maybe, but listen, you don't know my wife. Maybe. No, I'm kidding.
Maybe,
so listen, what do you say to people? And now that, well, we'll tie it up with this, okay? What do you say to people who are emotional about their stocks, emotional about their money, which I don't blame them, by the way, and they're in this market right now, and we're sitting here and, you know, with unrelenting volatility in and out of the days, who knows where we're going to nosedive by the end of today, because it is Friday afternoon at, what, 3:30 right now, that we're taping this, we're doing this.
Right, the market rebounding as we're taping.
Right, exactly. So the thing is that, you know, what do you tell people? How should they react, and where? How should they? I mean, I always tell them unemotional. It's got to be absolutely Spock-like when you're dealing with your money. What do you tell them?
I say that often to people, and then if you can't take the emotions out of it, you know, maybe take a small chunk of your investment portfolio and use that to trade, and you know, go crazy on the message boards, but keep the bulk of it at a mutual fund or an ETF, so your emotions, you know, don't get the best of you. And especially in times like these, when everyone's emotions are up, it's even more important to take a step back, try to be as calm and rational about things. And the best advice that I've heard is, in a market like this, you want to trade as little as possible unless you have a serious edge on what it is you're trading, because things can swing so dramatically and very quickly.
Yep. You have to be watching it every second, and I know that because we do a lot of trading, intraday trading for our clientele. All right, let me just sum it up with this. In 2 seconds or less, tell me, what do you project moving out the next few weeks?
Oh, more of the same.
More of the same.
Weeks, you know, I expect more of these wild type days, intraday and day to day moves. But you know, 6 months from now, I think, you know, we'll be higher than we are today.
Anything that we're going to find that's going to be any speculation of what we're going to see out there that may be, you know, bizarro that we can't even think about right now?
Well, that's the, you know, it doesn't seem so bizarre now, but you know, the idea that Bear Stearns could get bought out because, you know, it has all these problems, and apparently everyone else on Wall Street hates Jimmy Cain and Bear Stearns because of what
right.
happened in 1998 and long-term capital management, because he wouldn't play ball then.
Yep.
You know, an institution like Bear Stearns, you know, could no longer be in existence. That's something I don't think a lot of people thought about before the summer started.
Yeah, it is pretty bizarre. How about this? Let me throw this at you. Ready? Totally from left field. I think we're going to have a shakeout in the ETFs. You may say, what do you mean? I think we're going to see something bizarro happen in the ETF world. There's been way too much and way too fast of an asset class. And, you know, you wonder what kind of black box they were doing inside of there, and what kind of, we'll call it artificial or, you know, I don't want to say derivatives. We'll call it derivative-based investments to keep the ETF looking like an index.
That's a great point. And there's also, you know, a lot of the hedge fund managers use the ETFs to hedge their portfolios.
Right.
So they're not core investors in whatever that asset is. They, you know, they'll be very quick to sell it or, you know, buy more of it. I think you're right. I think we probably will see some wild swings in the ETF world.
And I think there's going to be something to come. That's again my theory. There's something. It's always been a little bit troubling, the ETF market, to me, just a little bit troubling. And we'll see if that happens. Tell them how they can you know, get in touch with you in terms of hear your stuff and read your information. Where do they go?
Well, www.thestreet.com is the most direct way to reach me. My podcast is called The Real Story. You can find it at thestreet.com. It's also on iTunes. And you know, you can search for my byline when you get to thestreet.com, or just type in my name at Google and you can find me that way too.
Great. And may I suggest to everybody that's listening out there that right now the podcast awards, which we did put ourselves in for this year, is, I think the voting's still going on, right?
I believe it is. Until the 15th,
yeah, so-
I think.
go over and go to podcastawards.com and vote for Aaron for the top podcast in the business space, because I'm not competing in it. So you might as well give it to him, because I think his stuff is great, a great podcast. He's won a lot of awards in it. And I think it's something, if you listen to this, I think you'll be very interested in subscribing to that. So thanks for joining me, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
You too, Andrew. Thanks very much.
Let's take another quick time out, and when we get back, we're going to talk about a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff coming, a lot of important things. You don't want to miss anything, so stick around for more of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
And that was great. And welcome back. Because Aaron Task, I think, has him. You know, he really has his eye on the markets 24/7. And he really, thestreet.com is a great place to get information. And he is the top of the food chain when it comes there. Of course, the mouthpiece is Jim Cramer from Mad Money. He's the, I think he and a couple others started that whole business back in the mid 90s, I believe it was. And they have some great information. So hop on over to there and read his articles. I'm going to put a link on the show notes to get the information on his podcast and how you can, in fact, vote for him. So we're going to talk a little bit now, or a lot about now, about this market. What is going on? I wrote up a couple of points recently on what I believed what was what I call the score of reasons for continued market volatility. You know, there's so many things out there, and you want to know what to blame and what to point the finger at. And you know, it's simple. I can give you 100 ideas. I could tell you all the things. You know what? It's all about greed. Once again, it's all about greed. It was greedy run up in the housing market because we had to have more and more profits and get as many houses as you can. And on the other hand, it was greed from the people lending money when they shouldn't have. Do you agree? I don't think you can agree. I mean, if you think about it, that's all it's about. It's never enough. It's never enough. And in a nutshell, I wrote this recently. In a nutshell, we are witnessing the corrective nature of the markets when it needs to expel a poison. You know, when you eat something or something, you know, isn't right, your body tries to get rid of it. And that's what's happening right now. This whole area of the subprime market where we lent money to people. And I want to say the word we, I mean the collective we. We lent money to people who could not afford it on the hopes on the back end that, wow, it's great. Their houses are going to go up in value. Who cares? We'll just buy them back. And now we see the mess that we brought ourselves in because we used assumptions that were wrong. We used theory that was totally inappropriate. And only for one reason, and it was for the lining of the pockets of all the people involved. Pathetic. Disgusting. Sure, the market's all about money. That's what I do all day. I mean, I hang around money all day. That's what I'm doing. My best friends are money, okay? But you know what? At the same time, you have to put a little bit of morals and ethics in this. And where was that when we were talking about the subprime lending? Where was that in the housing market? Where is that, you know, In the hedge fund debacles that we're seeing right now? Where is that, you know, in time and time and time again? What you have to do is you have to play the game with one eye on the markets and one eye on, hey, what's next and where is somebody going to screw me? Really, that's what you have to do. Where are they telling me this when it really should be that? Where am I finding out information that from this source that may be tainted? Hey, we're going to talk about that, as a matter of fact, in our next podcast, the whole idea of transparency. And I'll keep my powder dry a bit here on that. But, you know, you see this incredible new world of internet where immediate access, instant access, along with instant gratification comes along with that. And what we have is a recipe for people saying things that aren't true, maybe stretching the truth. You have maybe the idea that you want to get information out faster than anybody else, as we saw with the Apple blow-ups of the last few weeks, where we had two separate situations where false news came out and really tumbled the stock inappropriately. And at the same time, you have to, you know, wonder who can you trust out there. So with that in mind, I think that these aggressive lending practices and a general disregard for risk has forced it to occur in a violent manner, this expelling of this poison. But it is a cleansing process. It's a cleansing process that allows for, you know, the cream to rise and the crud to fall. But more importantly, though, it is a salient reminder for all of us to regularly look beyond what is happening today. to what's happening in the future. I always say that when you drive down the road, you know, you have to look ahead, but you also need to be looking in your rearview mirror. You need to be looking to your left. You need to be looking to your right. If you don't do so, you're going to crash. Hello? Ring any bells? Sound familiar? When we're just sitting in our car enjoying ourselves or just sitting with our portfolios, just being, again, you know, oblivious to what's going on out there, this is what happens. We need to really talk it up a bit more. We need to say, hey, you know what? Something's wrong here. This shouldn't be happening, and I'm not going to be a part of it. Instead of just sitting back and saying, you know what? It's not going to happen to me. It's not going to affect me. Because I'll tell you right now, if you have any money in the markets at all, even though you had nothing to do with any of this, it affected you, didn't it? And it hurts. That's a problem. So let me tell you about, you know, this whole idea of the sinkhole and what the reasons. First, let's start with the reasons, I think. You know, what are the reasons for this? Now, and we're going to go quickly through this because you can find this actually on our website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. It's under the article called A Score of Reasons for Continued Market Volatility. Obviously, subprime worries and illiquidity of the markets are a big concern right now. And that's why we saw the Fed inject $39 billion in total of money through open market operations. And we saw this very, very quickly throughout the day on the Friday after the big market plunge on that Thursday, where the credit markets felt that what happened actually was that we saw the target rate get out of alignment of where it should be and where rates were, and they had to adjust it downward. Then we have the lack of significant advanced intervention by the Fed. So that goes hand in hand with what we're talking about here, right? You know, the Fed under Greenspan would have actually, from what I've seen, would have gone ahead and in advance of all these problems would have done something. Well, they would have gone out and they would have either lowered rates, they would have added money, they would have changed the banking regulations. The three things that they can actually use when I say regulations, actually, the deposit requirements, the three things that they can use actually in their powers to really help the credit markets, because this is all about credit markets, folks. This is not about the markets. This is about credit issues. This is about liquidity issues. This is about the infrastructure of the housing and the core fundamentals of our economy here. The reason the Fed would adjust all this is not because of the markets. It's because of the credit issue, the liquidity issue. And while the talking heads were talking for weeks and weeks and weeks about, oh, there's no liquidity problem, we have no problems. Oh, hello? Hello? Knock, knock. Didn't you see we have some problems here? How could you keep on saying this? Don't you? It was like an egregious affront that they were on television saying that there was no liquidity issues. I mean, come on. Not only was there no liquidity issues, I mean, there was liquidity issues in the U.S., but did you see what France did? Did you see what the ECB did? I mean, they put five times the amount of liquidity in the market last week. So there is some problems, and I'll tell you, the other shoe is going to drop. It's not contained. If I hear that word one more time, that this is contained, okay, it is not. This goes much farther than just the U.S. and much farther than just the basic mortgage lenders out there. Did you see what happened to Bear Stearns and Lehman? Did you see what happened to these stocks because of their exposure? Did you see that there are several hedge funds that are now holding back and not releasing money? Don't tell me about containment. Now, I don't want to get into a rant here more than I am doing now, but this is not contained. Now, I'm not telling you either to jump out a window. I'm not telling you to freak out here, but you need to use some discretion when you invest. Don't blindly buy in the dips. Hey, we'll get to that in a second. I have this on listed here, too. Let's see. Buy in the dip mentality, number five, that keeps pushing the market regardless of poor fundamentals. This is not only a technical issue now, it is fundamentals. This is why we're going to see the continued volatility. We also have sloppy business practices by corporations looking to boost earnings at all costs. And that goes along with the record share back programs of artificially boosting earnings. Again, another issue is once again thinking that this time is going to be different, right? Isn't it always that? This time it's going to be different. I'm telling you, this time real estate's going to go up forever. And it's not going to stop going up. This time the tech market is totally different. We have an entirely different fundamentals. Don't worry about price earnings ratios. Don't worry about price book, right? I mean, come on. What are they talking about? I mean, what is the matter with these people? You know what? I'll tell you what's the matter with them. They think we're stupid, and we're not. They think we're going to buy whatever they have to sell, but we're not. We're going to use our smarts here. We're going to use disciplines, and we're going to invest wisely, and we're going to beat them at their own game. Historically, the weak dollar, has been or the strong dollar has been more of a policy of our government and the Fed, but our dollar is just tremendously weak at this point, and that screams for a reversion back to the mean and a need to get that to be much more on par with long-term averages. And there's a lot of reasons why, from a core philosophy of economics, that you want, if not a strong dollar, you want a solid dollar, where it is not right now. That's one of the reasons that the Fed has been handcuffed, because they're concerned if they reduce rates and if they add liquidity that the dollar is going to get hurt again. But once the dollar starts moving up in value, and it will, because it will cycle, and I can give you all the reasons why it should, the fact of the matter is that we're going to have a real problem with our companies that are doing a tremendous amount of exporting, because a lot of the earnings that are coming in right now are from overseas, where the dollar is extremely weak and their currencies are very strong, buying up everything at a bargain. That is going to cause some problems when that changes. Oil above $70 a barrel came down from about 78 or so, and it's still at 70, but oil over $70 a barrel will continue to be a problem, because there are so many facets of what oil is buying these days in terms of what oil is used in manufacturing as well, that is a big problem. I mean, we have to bring oil down, and the $16 billion penalty that the House has now approved and has to go through a few more cycles through, obviously before approval, which I don't think is going to get approved between you and I. But at the same time, we're talking about windfall taxes, and that scares the crap out of the oil companies. And as such, they are going to do what they can to fight back. That is not going to be good. Obviously, oil is moving down. Maybe it's in response of the windfall tax, and maybe there's a concern that, you know, we got to be careful here. So we're going to watch that very, very carefully. Over-accredited consumer with illiquidity due to irresponsibility. I mean, what more can I say? I mean, we're a credit-hungry country, right? But we have to be responsible, and we're not. But the biggest issue, or one of the biggest issues, is the allowing for the 1929 to occur again. What do I mean by that, right? What do you mean 1929 to occur again? Well, lenders gave out money in 1929 in the form of, and prior to that, obviously, in the form of margin. They didn't look at anything other than, hey, you know what? We'll give them the money. They'll invest it in the stock market. Stocks are going up. They'll pay it back. No problem. They didn't care about the ability of the person that was using it to repay it, because they felt that the stock market was always going to do well and they'll repay it without a problem. And if for whatever reason, you know, they can't repay it, they'll just take their stocks back. Well, fast forward, you know, decades, and here we go again. Lenders were giving out money, this time in the form of providing money for housing, whether it's the first house, the second house, second mortgages, third mortgages, credit cards, without regard for their ability to repay. Because you know what? If you do it on their house and you do a mortgage, well, housing prices always go up, and if they don't pay it back, we'll take their house. Well, now people are not paying it back and they're taking their house, but you know what? They're underwater, these companies, and that's why they're all going out of business in the subprime area, because the liquidity is shut down. They can't sell the houses that they're taking back. There's no more money coming in because there's nobody buying houses. It's this giant and vicious cycle and circle that is just causing a shutdown of the credit markets. This time the stakes are much higher because there's much more leverage in the real estate, if you think about it. Much more. No money downs. I mean, much more. It's not a 50-50 deal anymore. Not even a 10 or 20%. Differential between loan to value and the money they borrow. I mean, it's reckless at its least, at its worst. It's an egregious, unlawful act, and there should be some people severely punished and penalized because of this. Hedge funds, which are highly leveraged, also are causing problems. They're accentuating returns and on the up and the down, forcing losses to multiply and intensify as selling pressures are occurring in the down markets. Real big problem. We're seeing market cheerleading. Did you take a look at that poll that I put on the site? Go look at the poll section of the disciplinedinvestor.com site. We have a tremendous amount of people that are voting on the poll that I asked. Is CNBC cheerleading, or are they, in fact, you know, straight up and telling us the news? Do you know? I was pretty shocked about this. 100% of the people that polled said they were cheerleading. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I thought maybe 20, 30% would say that, yeah, you know, that there's some level of reporting going on, and there's definitely an overwhelming amount of cheerleading. But amazingly, as of this right now, 100% of the voters, and again, there's a good amount of people who voted, are saying that there's cheerleading going on. There's badgering and pushing by the bloggers, television, podcasting. I have a real concern, and I'm part of all this in obviously in essence, you know, what's going on? Are we being forthright, disclosing what our positions are and giving the right information? And who is this that you can trust? Again, we're going to talk about that more in the next podcast. But greed again and what's new. But one of the biggest issues that I think is going to cause the continuation of the volatility that we're seeing now, that's both up and down, but a lot of the down potentially, is the repeal of the uptick sale rule on the short sales when it comes to the markets. And that happened back about a month and a half ago or so, or maybe a little bit more than that, when we saw the impact of – it used to be that when you short sell or go against and you want a stock to move down, so you short sell the position, you could only do it and only short the position on an uptick of the stock as the stock was moving up. It's been that way since the 1934 Securities, the Securities Act of 1934. Now, I don't know why we cannot – I asked a lot of people. I polled a lot of people. I talked to a lot of people. Nobody can give me a straight answer because they don't know. We're all kind of wondering – why did they repeal that? That is no longer, you could short a stock on a downtick. Now, what does that mean? Think about it. As stocks are going down, people want to get in on the action, particularly the shorters. So they sell. Well, if they had to wait to an uptick and they sold, well, that really couldn't affect the stock as much at that point. But if they can short all the way down, they can crush a stock. And with the naked short problem that we have right now, and if you haven't seen this, I'll put a link to something that's about an hour long, discussion by a very fine gentleman that will frighten you to your seat. I'll tell you, it is an amazing thing, these naked shorts, what's gone on and how the people that are doing this, which it is illegal but hard to trace and hard to find, are making tremendous amount of money by really doing a tremendous amount of crushing when it comes to a stock. There are stocks that have been crushed and never came back because of naked short selling. Just an amazing thing. Just an amazing thing. But, you know, how do you survive this? What are you going to do? How are we going to, you know, get to this? First and foremost, I guess what we need to be doing is not panicking, okay? Now, hopefully you have some cash put aside, right? Because I told you since mid-July that there's some problems in the markets. You need to be really concerned and careful about this. And that obviously translates into increasing your cash position, not just buying and buying and buying. So don't panic. Don't panic. Don't panic, okay? What we want to do is we want to consider looking at some of the most beat up areas right now. And again, this is not just blindly looking at buying on the dips because I don't believe in that. But what I want to look at is some of the stocks that got sold dramatically out of sequence. In other words, yes, the housing, the financials, and some peripheral areas are really having some difficulty. But there are some really good companies out there that have a lot to offer us that will do well in these environments, number one. And number two, you have to think about the fact that some of them got very much oversold in this move down. And, you know, there was many of them moved up too high in the beginning, but now some of them are seeing a tremendous amount of selling pressure from all sides because what you've seen is the hedge funds having to clean up their positions, mutual funds again trying to clean up, and investors just hitting sell stops and a lot of program trading coming in. Number one, we talked about Apple. Apple's getting quite oversold. We put a buy-in in the 124 range when it recently hit that, and we felt that we start nipping. That's an important thing, you know, getting your toes into Apple. I think that Apple, when you look at Apple moving forward, as much as I said that it was a short in the 127 to 130 when the iPhone came out because of the pomp and circumstance, when you look at it now, or at least I said that you shouldn't be blasting forward into it. When you look at it now, I think that it's becoming a little bit oversold, and the opposite is happening. People are freaking out, trying to make sure they keep their profits. And I think Apple is something that we want to, you know, start looking at as a long-term buy here. Definitely not a trade, but long-term buy. Housing stocks are in the proverbial toilet, or maybe they really are in the toilet. And we're looking at companies that are having tremendous amount of trouble right now. But realize that if you are a long-term investor, and this discussion is more for the long-term for a moment, and then we'll get to the short-term issues, you know, that the housing is not going to go away. There'll be a consolidation, there will be mergers, there'll be acquisitions, and there will be a shakedown and a shakeout. But one of the ones that we looked at that we felt that could be benefiting, number one, we have to be careful the ones that have an overzealous amount of loans that they had put up. But Toll Brothers and KBH, TOL and KBH, we wanted to start looking at this point, getting into slowly. I think there'll be a turnaround and we're seeing a basing out. Be careful here, okay? Because you want to make sure to be abreast of the news. You want to be abreast of a stop loss. Put stop losses in on all of these, probably about somewhere about 8 to 10% below at this point because the volatility is a lot greater. If you get stopped out, okay, fine, we'll do it again. There's going to be a bottom here in some of these areas that were beat up way beyond where they should be beat up, because much of the news now in the housing is relatively priced in, unless they have something hidden. But, you know, for the most part, I think that the housing issue should be priced in well. If you're brave, you should add a small position to financials. Now, let me qualify that. We like Schwab, for example. Potentially, you want to look at the companies like Ameritrade that are going to benefit from the advanced volatility, right? I mean, when we see volatility like this and companies that are not involved in the lending practices as they were or in the housing markets, what do we find? We find that they benefit. Something like an Ameritrade, Schwab, maybe Merrill, but we have to be careful about that. Possibly Lehman. But Lehman and Merrill and Bear Stearns, the reason that they're different is that they had a huge exposure. I mean, just tremendous exposure to the credit markets. The tier that won't have that as much clearly and won't be in trouble like that, from what I can see, are the companies that are primarily the trading platforms. And there's only a few of those, but I think Schwab is a great place to be right now for that. Reevaluate your international equity mutual funds. And by the way, just a point of reference, you don't have to be writing all this down. I'll put a link again to this part of the discussion on the show notes. So just make sure to go to the Disciplined Investor blog, go to the podcast here and the podcast entry for this, and you'll have all these links. So reevaluate your international equity mutual funds. You know, move more allocations to domestic. We've talked about this before. When you have the dollar that's down in the dumps, you have an incredible benefit to international investments. And as such, when you do turn around, the opposite happens. And without going into an entire diatribe about this, the bottom line is that it's time to reevaluate. You sell the high and buy into the long. Asset allocation at its simplest. So you want to make sure to start culling your international equity investments that have been doing extremely well due to the fact that not only the international markets have done well, but that we're seeing a nice maybe 5 or 6% or maybe even a more 1 year return due to the dollar and euro / other currency differential. You want to watch for the Fed action. You know, if they continue to add liquidity, you want to start doing again and again the things I just talked about. You want to keep on nipping at Apple. You want to keep on maybe buying the home builders and looking at things like Schwab, et cetera, moving out of your international equity mutual funds more into a domestic allocation, okay? And if they discontinue that, though, if they don't have any more liquidity, okay, you have to add to your fixed income positions in the form of AA or better rated like preferred stocks. You need to clearly add sell stops across the portfolio to contain risk, but again, don't panic, okay? The other thing that you need to do is look at to add positions that have held up nicely through the storm. Ones that we have in our portfolios, to be honest with you, most of our portfolios did not lose money. As a matter of fact, we made an incredible amount of money last week because we have stocks like Zoomia, ZUMC, SanDisk, SNDK. Talked about that some time ago, that they're going to be the beneficiary on the DRAM and the NRAM. Because of the Apple iPhone and because of the requirements, because of many of the manufacturers now for the portable instruments and portable players to have hard code disk versus anything that spins. Zeus and Steel Dynamics, those are two steel companies. We think they're going to benefit for continuing infrastructure build out as well as bridge repairs, obviously, as we saw. Nokia and something like Shutterfly. We think that Shutterfly is a great thing. We've been recommending that for I don't know how long right now, for the last 6 months, and we're making some great money on Shutterfly. Don't get sucked into the automatic bounce. You know, hey, that we think that things are just going to bounce back. But even if it does, it's not prudent. It's just not. Slow down and think about your moves. If they don't work out immediately, fine. But stick to disciplines. The word disciplines, the core component of this podcast, is something that you need to really focus in on, okay? Again, I thank you. This is a little bit longer than usual, this podcast. So there was a lot of things to talk about that I think were very important. And next time we'll make it shorter, I guess. Go to iTunes and please give me a review. Again, we have 3 more books to give out. If you give me a review on iTunes, very easy. Just give me a review and then send me an email at either info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com or askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And next week, we're going to talk about transparency. We got John C. Dvorak. We also have the guy who has the lead developer of Wiki Financial. Really cool thing, but we question whether or not this is going to be something that we want to really participate in as investors and people that are looking for information. Stay tuned to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Promise to do our best to make you money, and I hope you have a great week, and be careful out there. It's a rough one right now. Have a great week, and I'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.